KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon. The OCC newspaper provides Oregonians with information, local and national news, recipes, cultivation tips, and more. It is available for free at most alternative medicine clinics, pipe shops, and medical cannabis organizations. Visit online at OregonCannabisConnection.com to learn more about how the OCC connects the medicinal cannabis community across Oregon. KSKQ thanks Oregon Cannabis Connection and listeners like you for supporting community radio. And 5 o'clock Wednesday, it's Beer Radio. Let's go with our beer drinking song from Germany.
Im Himmel gibt's kein Bier, drum trinken wir es hier. Denn sind wir nicht mehr hier, dann trinken die anderen unser Bier. Sicher muss der Wein vom Rhein etwas Wunderbares sein.
Sicher ist am feinen Sekt etwas, was besonders schmeckt.
Sicher ist der Schnaps so scharf, dass man einen heben darf.
Aber heute seid gescheit, liebe Leute.
Im Himmel gibt's kein Bier, drum trinken wir es hier. Denn sind wir nicht mehr hier, dann trinken die anderen unser Bier.
Und seine Eigenart.
Eine fliegt auf glatt rasiert, die andere auf den Bart.
Einer möchte nur Fußball spielen, dem anderen ist das Durst.
Wir allein gestehen es ein, wir haben immer Durst.
Vom Rhein etwas Wunderbares sein.
Sicher ist am feinen Sekt etwas, was besonders schmeckt.
Sicher ist der Schnaps so scharf, dass man einen heben darf.
Aber heute seid gescheit, liebe Leute.
Im Himmel gibt's kein Bier, drum trinken wir es hier.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Beer Radio. Happy Thanksgiving Eve. This is Ginger Johnson, your host with Beer Radio. Thanks for tuning in on this busy, cozy Wednesday night, hopefully for you, as the American Thanksgiving holiday kicks off. I can remember several years back, seems like in a former life, I lived on the border of Minnesota and Ontario, Canada, and celebrated many a Canadian Thanksgiving, which of course happens in October, if you are Canadian or familiar with that. It was great. It's kind of nice because we had double whammy holidays. Go up into Ontario and celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving, eh? And then we'd also celebrate American Thanksgiving. So we all have a lot to be thankful for. Hopefully you are exercising gratitude as well. Not trying to be preachy, but you know what? There's a lot of things that we should be grateful for. So I'm grateful for your tuning in. Once again, welcome back to Beer Radio, happening every Wednesday, live here from Ashland, Oregon. And this week's guests will, of course, fit really well with the beer personalities that we've had already. Of course, every single one is singularly different and tons of fun to have. So he'll be calling in shortly. And so in the meantime, we'll just get a little housekeeping out of the way. Of course, some of you know that we've gone from low power to high power tower. KSKQ, our home station, is always a community-supported radio, and what that really translates to is it's funded by listeners and all of us producers. So if you feel compelled and you like what you hear, we always appreciate any donations. They can be made online at kskq.org. KSKQ.org, or you can send them to the station, and our address is right there on the website at KSKQ.org. So thanks for the consideration. In the meantime, keep listening. All the Beer Radio shows, like a lot of our great shows, are archived and available for your listening pleasure and reference any old time once they are archived. And again, those are on our site, KSKQ.org. This is episode 34, which is fantastic. I had no idea when I started this in February that it would be so much fun. And we've certainly been focused on getting great people from all across the beer community in on the conversation. And so they've been very generous and gracious with their time. So as we get into the holidays, there's going to be probably a couple little hiccups, and but we'll still bring you some great guests. Thanks for tuning in. You can always reach me and tell me your feedback. Ask me to perhaps find somebody that you would like to listen to and hear more about. I'm happy to take requests. We have a pretty broad reach into the beer community, be it breweries, distributors, retailers, homebrewers, you know, authors, all kinds of great people. So feel free to reach out. Excuse me. Live radio is wonderful. Ginger@womenenjoyingbeer.com. And you can also tweet along with us at Women Enjoy Beer. And then, of course, we are on Facebook, that juggernaut that it is, at Women Enjoying Beer. So let's hang on just a second. I got to grab something from my bag, which means I have to ease back my chair. Here we go. Thanks for hanging with. So, excuse me. Today's guest is coming to us from the Midwest. We'll give him a minute here to call in. And in the meantime, one thing I would love to know from anybody who's listening today from our audience, and thanks again, by the way, I would like to know, I would love to hear what states you're listening from and where you're streaming it from. Not necessarily the channel, obviously, is the one that's online, but I'd love to know and hear from you. I know when we had Allison Grayson on, the independent filmmaker who put out The Love of Beer in August, or world premiere, I should say. She'd worked on it for a few years, of course, a documentary, and got a shout out from somebody in Georgia, and that was really cool. And I know we have some people that listen once in a while in North Carolina, which is fantastic. Fantastic. And so be sure to let us know where you are listening from, because it's interesting and it's helpful. The company that I have, Women Enjoying Beer, is definitely research-based, and so some of those little nuggets of information are really helpful to have. So when you feel compelled and when you have the time, reach out. Like I said, you can reach me, ginger@womenenjoyingbeer.com, at any time, and you can tweet along with us at Women Enjoy Beer, and then on Facebook, Women Enjoying Beer. So there you have it. We've had a number of fantastic guests from all over the community, and we've chosen to talk about beer, the beer community, and not restrict it or make sure that it's only covering one area, because there are so many great people in the community, and so we want to make sure that we cover a broad range and a wide variety of people from all over. We've had homebrewers, we've had homebrewers gone professional into professional brewers, we've had brewers themselves. We haven't had a distributor yet, and I would love to have a distributor on, and so I'm going to tap into some of those people, because our three-tier system in the United States is what it's called, importer slash brewer. Second step is the distributor, and third step is the retailer. And so we have an interesting system that was originally set up post-prohibition to help make sure that safe alcohol was deliverable, and that it was regulated and moderated, because prohibition, of course, maybe you remember the saying, or maybe you've heard the saying, it was called the noble experiment, and it certainly was successful in its failing. So we have this three-tier system in place. So we're going to look into finding a distributor, and in the meantime, we've got lots of other great people as well. So the phone just rang. We're going to double-check and make sure everything is on the up and up for our guest, and then we'll be off and running. So we appreciate you tuning in on this Wednesday night. Of course, Thanksgiving is tomorrow night. It's a great thing to be thinking about, no matter what you're going to enjoy for a meal. Thanksgiving is a great beer holiday, or as my friend James Book from Ninkasi said today, I love eating holidays, and Thanksgiving is certainly one of them. And speaking of a great people, I think Otto is on the line. Hello, Otto.
Hey there.
How are you, my friend?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I am fabulous, of course, but I'll get better. We have the distinct pleasure today, everybody, to have James Ottolini, otherwise known as Otto, from Schlafly, otherwise known as St. Louis Brewing, in St. Louis, Missouri. So what's the weather like in St. Louis tonight, Otto?
You know, it's partly sunny with a chance of tornadoes. It's standard fare for St. Louis. It's good, you know. It seems pretty mild right now.
Okay. Do you get many tornadoes through St. Louis?
You know, we're in this, I think we're in the exit lane of Tornado Alley in St. Louis. And so everyone, it's a nail biter every year. But yeah, I mean, we've had some come pretty close.
Yeah.
Not this time of year, though.
Good, good. Because you've got that extraordinarily architecturally unique structure there that a tornado would probably make pretty fast work of if it really got a piece of it.
Oh, yeah. It's the handle on the plug that keeps the Mississippi from draining.
Is that what that sound is once in a while?
It is, yeah. You know, Ross Perot predicted a giant sucking sound. It's going to start right here.
Well, thanks for making time on Thanksgiving Eve for us, Otto. Do most people call you Otto, or do a lot of people call you James, or how does that end up falling out?
Well, it's all part of the witness protection program, and so I try to mix it up a bit. But my you know, the straightforward answer is most people call me Otto. If you walked into the brewery and asked for James, and about half the employees would give you a funny look and say, there's no one here by that name.
That's right. And they're in on the witness protection element there, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
It's good to have colleagues like that that'll do anything for you. James, who? Yeah, that would be Mr. Bond, and he's on, you know, a different street in a different country.
Yeah, so. It's the Italian side.
Right, exactly.
Good to be paranoid, you know, when the whole world's out to get you.
That's right. I suppose that's kind of a protective device. So Otto, you are with Schlafly, St. Louis Brewing. The brand name, help us make sure this is really clear. St. Louis Brewing is the business name proper. Is that right? Or straighten me out.
It's the St. Louis Brewery Incorporated.
Okay.
So if you wanted to sue us, your lawyer should look up St. Louis Brewery Incorporated. Actually, please don't. But the that is the name of the incorporation papers. But Tom Schlafly is the principal owner, and, you know, is sitting with that, and someone who likes to put his name behind things and stand behind it, it's more of that than, say, any sort of ego boost is and St. Louis is known for beer families and that are willing to put their name on the brand.
Right.
And that's where Schlafly brand beer comes from.
Okay. All right. Is there a relationship to Phyllis Schlafly, the rather well-known female thought leader?
That's a very politically correct way of phrasing it. You are definitely not going to get pepper sprayed.
I am taking lessons from my friend James.
That's right. No pepper spray for you. So, yes, absolutely. She is a relative.
Okay.
Tom has a father, as most of us do, and his father had a brother who married a woman named Phyllis.
All right.
And Phyllis, that's the relationship.
Okay, so she's Tom's aunt.
Uh-huh.
Very good.
The similarities pretty much end there.
Does she like beer? Do we know this?
No, it's funny. I'll probably be speaking out of turn, but I remember way back in the early days, she had expressed her discontent with Tom for associating the family name with the house of ill repute that made beer, and when she had worked so hard to do so much for the family name, and Tom let her know what he thought of that. They don't share political views. And I really tried to get Tom to allow us to print up T-shirts that said, Schlafly beer, great taste, less Phyllis. But in his infinite wisdom as a...
Oh, that's brilliant. That's great marketing right there. I'll back you up on
as
that.
As a family man and a lawyer, he chose the path of discretion and ignored my marketing idea, which I think he was very wise to do.
You know, yeah, okay, very good.
Well, we get that question a lot, though.
Do you?
Yeah, it's funny, though. You go to Washington, D.C. Mm. Washington, D.C. and St. Louis seem to be the two towns that really have no trouble pronouncing the name Schlafly.
Hmm. And I bet they don't have any trouble pronouncing Kottman either, then, do they?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, not now.
No, not now. Dan always kind of looks like the cousin to Albert Einstein. He makes me smile every time I see him.
He definitely has the hairstyle of a genius at times.
Hairstyle of genius, yes, indeed. So, all right. Well, we are pleasantly off course. You are listening to Beer Radio. This is Ginger, your host. We have the distinct pleasure of having French literature major and brewery aficionado James Ottolini from Schlafly in St. Louis. Thanks again for joining us, Otto.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, of course. So, we'll ask a couple of relatively basic questions, and then, of course, I love the diversions. In fact, I was talking to my fine husband, Larry, the other night, who you know well as well. I said, it's too bad I don't have a two-hour show for Otto, because, you know, this could actually be kind of a, you know, let's film all day kind of thing, people, so just get comfortable. But, because you are so multifaceted, Otto, and I truly have never met anybody else like you, and even more so not in the beer industry, and with the intense individualism that the beer industry has, it's particularly intriguing, and we'd love to know how you got into beer.
Let's see, how did I get into beer? Well, I took a perfectly good hobby and ruined it. like a lot of us out there, right? And so that was it, essentially. I dabbled around in homebrewing and that natural curiosity and a small investment, but at the time what seemed like I was, the homebrewing equipment. Led me to the taproom when I moved back to the States and to St. Louis, which is my native hometown. And
okay.
I was looking for a job in between grad school gigs, thinking, oh, yes, I need to find myself. And my father said, yeah, well, finish that sentence. You need to find yourself a job first. So that's what I did. I mean, in many respects, I was in the right place at the right time, because the job that I did find was at a local pub that had just opened, a brew pub, first brew pub in Missouri, and that was the St. Louis Brewery and Taproom.
Okay.
Future home of Schlafly Beer.
Okay. Well, it wasn't the first... Okay, so let's just get this one right out here, because, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Anheuser-Busch, of course, is a local, well, used to be, well, now it's Anheuser-Busch InBev, of course, ABI.
Yeah.
And that was the hometown brewery for a while, and
yeah,
for a long time. Do people in St. Louis still look to Anheuser-Busch InBev as the hometown brewer, Otto? Or how? I know you and I have chatted a little bit about that, and I know that you've told me that with that massive merger, or the change, I'll just say, that's probably a little more politically correct for the Bush family. How do people now perceive, obviously, you're Schlafly, and you're not going to go international and so forth and so on, so you've got the comparative there of the other gigantic brewery right there. What are some of the thoughts that you think people have about St. Louis beer now, 3 years, 4 years after the change, and with you being there as well?
Well, let's see. So beer is this, everybody understands beer, and relatively few people really understand beer. And like anything, that when you get into the understanding of something, those who really understand it admit that they don't know what the heck is going on, right? And it's on a level of mastery, all masters know that, yeah, there's a level of humility that comes with that wisdom that says, man, I don't really know. But at the same time, they say, it's not anything until I say it is.
Hmm.
So, sorry, that's I'll pull it back from the esoteric and...
No. Please, let your esoteric monkey free.
Oh, my God. So, I wish I only had one.
Monkeys, sorry, that's plural. What's a bunch of monkey? It's not a herd. A clutch?
Oh, yeah. I'll have to look that up. These are more baboons and heat, esoteric baboons.
Wow, they're really out there.
Preening one another. Sometimes they're just bouncing, throwing things off the glass facade. In 08, when InBev acquired Anheuser-Busch, for us as a company, there was a real strong jerk, as it were, on volume. I have no idea how much money we left on the table. We could only produce so much and increase so much.
Right.
But there was definitely a lot of folks locally who said, well, the new hometown brewer is Schlafly Beer.
Hmm. And 20 years after you started, huh?
How many years?
What was it, like about 17, 18 at that point?
Yeah, it was 17 years at that point. And that, we were going into our 17th year, but still, it's a lot easier said than done. And so when you're a pub that... here, put it in this context. Articles of incorporation were 89. The pub opened its doors in 91. December 26, 91, to be specific. And for those of you who have done or have been involved with or even around an opening or a startup, you know that, and I don't mean just a pub, but any business, you know that it's, every once in a while there might be a delay. This was no exception, given that it was the first brew pub. There hadn't been a brew pub. There had been other breweries in St. Louis and in Missouri, those were the snags. And how can you have a pub in this state, right? You're going to manufacture, you're going to wholesale, you're going to retail alcohol, you're going to allow dancing, you're going to allow kids in there who, we're the state that inspired the movie Footloose. We're in one of the holes of the Bible Belt, in the buckle.
That's a classic movie. I will admit happily that I have that at home.
We're not exactly on the cutting edge of forward thinking here sometimes. So it's a lot easier to make a law than it is to unmake one. Nonetheless, it was a challenge to open up a brew pub. All the menus, all the matchbooks, all the business cards, everything said since 1991. So hell or high water, the place was opening in 91. And that was December 26th.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of smart money said, you're not going to open up a pub in St. Louis. That's like bringing a new religion to Mecca. And so the, way to set yourself
the monkeys
up
didn't like that.
Now. What's that?
The monkeys, I don't think were looking... The Mecca monkeys probably weren't looking for that.
No, exactly. Yeah. So, let's see. It was wildly successful. And by the time that... But let's see what I want to say. I'm trying to bring it back to the whole AB InBev acquisition. And even though, when they had opened a pub, and then years after when we started growing the brand and getting tap handles or getting shelf space in stores, when, of course, everyone said, this is St. Louis, you're not going to get a tap handle, you're not going to get any of the stores to give you shelf space. It all kept happening, but you have to understand that in that environment, in that mindset, you go forward with a bit more caution. Even when the industry around you is growing, you say, yes, but we're in St. Louis. And so we've never really planned. There's no crying over spilled beer here.
Mm-hmm.
It was done with some amount of risk and some amount of caution, I think. Over the almost 20 years, it's all been very good business, good decisions being made in the business. But we couldn't be what everyone thought we would be.
Hmm.
we couldn't be the rebound brewery for St. Louis, if you will.
Sure.
You know, Monsanto. Everybody loves Monsanto. Who doesn't love genetically modified anything, right? Monsanto is the St. Louis company, but no one calls it the seed company. Emerson, you know, originally was electric motors and fans, and no one calls it the motor company or the fan company, and no one calls Boeing or McDonnell Douglas the plane company, but everyone calls Anheuser-Busch the brewery. There's just something intimate and familiar. We take motors for granted. We take, you know, where our seeds come from for granted. Not so much anymore. A lot of people are gaining interest in that. Mm-hmm. And maybe we even take our beer for granted, but beer is front and center at many events, right?
Mm-hmm.
At sporting events, at family events, at events with friends. It's really a lubricant for social intercourse, and it's always there, and you appreciate it. And even if it is something like a light American lager that maybe your average craft beer drinker doesn't appreciate, but in St. Louis, that's really part of the fabric. You can't say anything bad about Anheuser-Busch without somebody being affected by that, right? Mm-hmm. You never know who. It's a friend, a family member, neighbor. It's, you know, supplies is supplied by or works directly for the brewery.
Mm-hmm.
So there's I would challenge any St. Louisan to not feel some sense of civic pride at the seventh inning stretch when you hear the old Budweiser theme song, you know, when the Clyde fails. I mean, there's always going to be that element of pride.
Is that the here comes the bud, here comes the big number one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know it.
Oh, yeah. That was growing up during that era. So, you know, I grew up with Miller, in Minneapolis, and, you know, certainly not the juggernaut that Budweiser was, but Grain Belt and Schlitz and Hams, you know, those were really big beers, too, for that region.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Interesting. So, why do you suppose, given that the St. Louis was, you know, is Anheuser-Busch in lots of intents and purposes and ways, you said it was wildly successful when it opened. Clearly it resonated with a lot of people. And who do you suppose those people were that helped make that pub opening really successful? Were they, because there's always going to be the curiosity seekers. There's always going to be the people, well, the new thing is opening, I better go check it out at least once. But what do you suppose made that pub so successful, with the fact that AB was such a big part and good part of the fabric of St. Louis?
Well, I'd say a couple different factors, three that come to mind. The one is that, you know, being in the middle of two coasts, we tend to look to the coasts for trends, regardless of what it is, right? And so if you're a little bit behind on the trend in St. Louis, and you say, man, wouldn't it be great to have XYZ? I visited some relatives, or I was, you know, doing business on the West Coast and saw this. And so I think people were eager for something like that.
Okay.
It wasn't absolutely brand spanking new in the country, but it was new for St. Louis.
Okay.
So there's that, the novelty factor, and thank goodness St. Louis has something. The second thing is the neighborhood that we went into.
Mm-hmm.
It was really no one's neighborhood.
Mm.
And by that I mean, I just assume other cities are like this, but St. Louis has a north side, and there are people from the north side that never go to the south side.
All right.
And they're staying from the south side to the north side, and forget about all those West County folks. I'm from West County, and so that's sort of the suburban sprawl going out west. And it's just funny, you know, how people get so cliquish.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in downtown, in an area of downtown that had been hit by a firestorm in 1976. And it was devastated. I think if you've ever seen the movie Escape from New York, It was filmed in 1978 in St. Louis. I don't think the director could find any place that looked as post-apocalyptic as St. Louis did in this area that had been hit by this firestorm. Because the building that the original brewery is in was only three stories tall, it escaped a lot of the heat and intensity that some of the taller buildings crumbled under. There's still evidence of fire damage in there because it's this old post and beam construction where you can you can actually see where some of the char was sandblasted off the beams. But it was no one's neighborhood, is my point.
Okay.
So you could have lawyers from four blocks away next to bikers from a mile north. And I mean Harley bikers. I don't think we allowed bicyclists in St. Louis back then. They're making headway, though.
Was that too West Coast?
Yeah, too West Coast. They hadn't made it, you know, it's kind of like killer bees.
Right, yeah. Go back and crunch your granola somewhere else.
Killer bees, fire ants, and cyclists.
Nice.
They're all kind of making inroads. And eventually they'll be everywhere and we'll all live together somehow, but it's good.
Okay. Very good.
So
what's the third facet? What was the third facet that you think brought the success of the brew pub?
Fancy dancing girls.
I'm not believing that for a moment.
No, it was the third thing was although we get a lot of requests for fancy dancing girls, mainly from our brewers. But now the third thing was when you are, it's real easy to talk smack about the big corporations, right? And we allowed the press to do that for us. There is no way we were going to stop them. There's just, you can sell too much paper and airtime with the David and Goliath story. But we just felt that, look, you never really gain good friends, long-standing friends, or customers by talking smack and saying, you know what's great about our beer? Our beer doesn't taste like their beer. Well, that's fantastic. Why don't you tell me a little bit of something about you? And, you know, it'd be like me telling you that you and I are going to be really good friends, and the way I can tell is that this other guy over here is a jerk. And I've pretty much told you that I can't be trusted, right? I mean, even kids have antenna that pick up on that kind of BS. And so I think from day one, we've always stood on our merits. And our merits were, look, you can get lots of different beers here in St. Louis, but they're all fitting within this sort of narrow category of offerings. And what we'd like to do is give you some different styles of beer from around the world. Do our best to emulate those categories, and we'll have fun with it. And it just kept growing to where we actually had to scale down the number of styles we were making because it was unmanageable.
All right. Very cool. And so speaking of styles, I'll remind everybody that you are listening to Beer Radio with me, your host, Ginger Johnson, coming to you every Wednesday, 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And we have special guest James Ottolini from Schlafly. So, Otto, I noticed on your site today when I was doing my brush-up homework, the site says, and we're going to get back to the fancy dancing girls in a moment because there's somebody that dances around your brewery in a kilt, is that it says you have over 50 styles of beer that Schlafly makes.
Yep.
That is a big number of different beers. Can you share with us a little bit about, you know, how many, your pale ale is your flagship, correct?
That's correct.
And then you've got all these others. So how many are year rounds and then, you know, are there seasonals? I know you do all kinds of special releases and so forth and so on. So tell us about the 50 styles of beer that Schlafly offers.
Well, I mean, it gets to be like collecting holy cards after a while. I mean, and we all know what that's like, right?
Holy, as in like W H O, or are we talking they have holes in them from moths, or
no, the
Mecca thing,
the cards with all the saints on them.
Oh, right, yeah, I no clue.
The
I'll ask the monkeys.
Yeah. few monkeys on five, four, three.
Oh, okay. No, they just left the studio. Sorry, we're out of luck. They're a little restless.
So, let's see. We started out with a pub, and we weren't bottling any beers. Then we started kegging some beers, but not all of those were available, and in on draft off premise, right?
Okay.
In other on premise accounts,
right?
And so the number 50 plus refers to all the beers that we make, but not necessarily go into draft or bottle.
Okay.
We serve about 30 beers, and I say about because I'm embarrassed to say that I don't know anymore, because we introduce these beers and then we think that they're one-off and then they come back because they're so popular, and that's kind of the trap you get yourself into.
Right.
But we actually take our portfolio of seasonals, and some of them are only brewed every other year.
Okay.
And we have between 45 and 50. We'll lay some of those beers up on lees in kegs to age in the keg, and then we serve them once a year. We have a Hop in the City Beer Festival that is once a year in September, and there are 45 to 50 beers on tap, and they're all beers that we made, and that doesn't include the cask-conditioned ales that we're serving. But going back to the sort of the more marketing lineup is we have 7 year-round styles that are available in bottle and draft.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a seasonal rotation, and it's shaken up a bit. We used to do 4 seasons, and now we do 3 seasons.
Okay.
And there are 2 seasonal beers in that. And then we also have a special release series with 5 beers there, and the special reserve series with 2 beers in there, a bottle condition series, and God, I think that one's up to 6 now.
Okay.
And then we have a brewer's choice, and that comes out 3 times a year along with the special, along with the seasonals.
Okay. Wow, you got some. It makes me just jealous of the people that can walk down the street and go enjoy a fresh Schlafly on tap at your pub.
It is fun. But it's also one of those things where you end up having to put a governor on it or something.
Yeah, the really? Monkeys don't know anything about governors. The governor kicks in when the bananas are all gone, and that's just really kind of a arbitrary, dang it, kind of thing. Where's the next tree?
Yeah, so. The serotonin levels drop, and then
right,
you know, I'll break it. We have it's another interesting thing is having started out as a pub and having 2 restaurant locations with bars. I don't know if I could blame the competition or, you know, just creative salespeople for other distributors, but we often get maybe this is just a real threat by other bars and restaurants. Some perceive us as a threat because they say, why would we put you on tap? You are our competition. And rather than seeing us as a local brewery, they would love to support. And, yeah, that's cool. I'll give it to them. But in some instances, we've really tried to spread the love by saying, hey, we have this big Oyster and Stout Festival. It's sponsored by Tabasco and Southwest. Stop me if I'm being too pushy or promotional or anything like that. And I'm not trying to promote the Oyster and Stout Festival that's happening in March. Don't miss it. But we fly in like 30,000 oysters over the weekend and go through them. Well, one of our accounts, the Broadway Oyster Bar, gosh, you know, with a name like that, somehow they came up with the idea that we were stealing a bit of their oyster thunder.
Oh.
So it was never our intention. And so it's, you know, we're just about saying, hey, you know, oysters and beer sounds fun, right? There's no evil, Dr. Evil maniacal scheme where we're writhing our hands saying, how can we...
Right.
Undo all the hard work of the Broadway Oyster Bar.
Right.
So we said, hey, why don't we just send a bunch of our oysters down there and spread the love, have a big party here and there. And, you know, you'd do that? So, of course we would. The same things happen with beers sometimes. You get people that say, I've got an idea for a beer, or you've got a head chef at a restaurant or the bar manager who's a home brewer and comes up with an idea for a vanilla milk stout and wants to make it. And the next thing you know, we're brewing a vanilla milk stout in collaboration with such and such an account, and they're getting all, you know, half of the keg, and then we're serving the other half. And once you do that for one bar, you know, 20 more pop up and say, hey, we like that. You know, we got an idea too. So it's funny when you try to be the hometown hero, be careful what you wish for.
Right, exactly. So when you opened the doors and you started going to other on-premise and other places where Schlafly started showing up, you talked about, you know, taps and shelf space and so forth and so on. So who was out pounding the pavement to ask people to put Schlafly on tap, Otto?
Well, actually, I mean, no disservice or insult to our sales staff over the years, and, you know, various people who have pounded the pavement. But there has been a long-standing tradition of the sort of unwilling. We've been pulled by the market, and so the there were a couple accounts that really wanted to put us on tap, and so we looked into getting some kegs so that we could accommodate them. We had a few kegs so that we could, you know, empty a serving tank and fill, you know, clean it and fill it again without interrupting service. But then it kind of kept growing, and then once you make that investment into a container of kegs, then you really start pounding the pavement and trying to get, or, you know, when you hire the local craftsman to spin you know a couple hundred tap handles out of recycled wood and whatnot. You say, oh my God, wow, they cost how much? Okay, let's go out and put these, you know, get them out of the boxes, off the shelf, and make some money off these things. So who was responsible in the early days? It was a bartender and a restaurant manager by the name of Paul Jensen and Tom Sweeney, respectively. They had been here since before opening. They showed up and helped work to build and construct the site and get it open. And they were both natural. They had a natural propensity towards sales. I did not. My sales career ended in Cub Scouts with 12 cans of peanut brittle. I got six houses away from my home and had six no's, and I was on my way back home to figure out how much I had in the piggy bank and, you know, I was going to work the cash flow on the whole peanut brittle situation for troop number 405. So, and that was the end of my sales career.
So since obviously you're not in sales at Schlafly, although you are an incredible ambassador, what is your official position then, Otto, with Schlafly and St. Louis Brewing?
My official position is head of brewing operations.
And that means what?
It means that I am a person, and I occupy myself during the day with all the trappings and ongoings of running a factory that makes beer.
Excellent.
Have I completely sucked the joy out of life? Because this is one of my specialties.
No. Why would you say that?
Oh, no. The thing is,
saying that beer's made in a factory, because that's really what it boils down to. That's manufacturing. You know, the word factory, I'm guessing, comes from manufacturing or one or the other.
Well, here's the thing. In St. Louis, you have a large brewery that actually has brewmasters that went to Germans or Weinstephan and or UC Davis, or, you know, people who have passed the IBD exam.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole, and really outside of the U.S., there's a hierarchy, there's a trade, there's a set process that you go through for that title.
Mm-hmm.
And that's honored by a lot of people here in the States. And so by some measures, yeah, you could call me the brewmaster, but we have always eschewed that title because okay. we've got a lot of friends who work down at AB and... you know, you see through that. And it just seems a bit more appropriate to say, well, we've got brewing operations here. We're not really a large enough brewery to have a brewmaster. But anyway, brewmaster always, it also conjures up something that's relatively magical for people.
Mm.
You don't, right? I mean,
right, beer is a romance language.
Yeah, you do the aptitude test in high school, and it's like, brewmaster's not on there. It's
no.
You might as well say...
Either it's distiller or, you know, pig slaughterer or...
Yeah, well, maybe
like
it is now. It should be, but shoot,
it should
you know,
be.
It's... I find that there is a level of magical wonder or romance to the title when you say it to people. That
oh, for sure.
I could say, I'm a fifth-level dwarf. And, you know, or I'm a wizard. It kind of says the same thing. Wow, what's that mean? Tell me more.
Uh-huh.
If you say, I'm the head of operations in a factory that makes beer, well, yeah, I mean, that's more sexy and cool than, you know, I run a factory that makes toilet seats. But, you know, we're essentially a bunch of people in a big box that's filled with the one of the coolest erector sets around. You put in grain and hops, and beer comes out the other end.
Okay. Yeah, that's one hell of a process, too, indeed. You are listening.
And humans operate it, and humans have emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Now it gets really exciting.
There's a lot of words for exciting sometimes, isn't there, Otto?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. You are listening to Beer Radio. I'm Ginger Johnson, your host. We have the distinct pleasure of having philosopher cum beer factory operator James Ottolini from Schlafly with us today from St. Louis. Thank you for joining us again, Otto. It's always a pleasure. I do wish whenever I see you, and you're so good humored and you're so kind and charitable when I approach you, because it's just always interesting to talk to you. I never know where the conversation's going to go. I usually don't have a topic in mind because it really doesn't matter. It's just, you know, we launch into conversation, and I'm sure a lot of people appreciate how thoughtful you are with stuff. So thanks for making time tonight.
Sure. Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Indeed. So we've got a few minutes left, and I would ask if there's, you know, I see that Schlafly, and this is one thing I've noticed, and I've noticed for quite some time, actually, ever since I became aware of Schlafly, which is probably, oh, golly, I don't know, probably 9-10 years ago, I'm guessing, when I started getting familiar with beer. And you're involved in a lot of... I don't know what the right PC, but I'm not going to worry too much about it. But philanthropic community kinds of efforts, i.e. the Maplewood Farmers Market and the arts and those kinds of things. And are you involved very much in those efforts that Schlafly works with other community partners?
Yeah, absolutely. We get into so much now that I feel like a hypocrite or a liar saying, oh, yes, I'm involved in that because I'm only involved in a fraction of it now. But, you know, that's one of the cool things about having, I'll speak for Tom and I'll speak for myself and anyone else who's been there along the way, is you have one cool idea, you stand behind it, and, you know, it's kind of a blessing and a curse that a bunch of crazy people show up and say, that's a cool idea,
mm-hmm.
and they take it and they make it their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then that may be annoying if you were perhaps prone to obsessive compulsive control type desires, but, you know, if you're a little bit mellow, which is easy to do in the beer industry, right? It's hard to be. It's great to be OCD about like control points and parameters and sure. quality measures that you're trying to meet in terms of producing a great beer. But other than that, it's hard to be real uptight about beer. It's beer, right? And relax.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have a great idea, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, there's a bunch of crazy people surrounding you, and they've made it theirs, and then all of a sudden, it's larger than anybody ever thought it could have been. And I think that's one of the successful things. And it's one of the things that, you know, with it's also a business,
mm-hmm.
but we've been wise and diligent about the number side of the business enough to where we can be perhaps in some eyes foolhardy, but in others just faithful that, hey, this is a good idea. Why don't we do this? And there's plenty of good ideas that were a failure, but like the whole farmers market thing started out when we were building the second facility. What we needed was additional production. But in order to get the property, we had to have the interest of the community that, you know, go figure, right? That the neighbors of the property and the citizens in that township and the township itself and their city manager said, that's all interesting that you want to make beer in a factory, but we would really like you to have a restaurant and bar like you have downtown. Okay, well, yeah, we'll do that. What would we do differently? Well, any wise restaurateur is going to say, you got a great facility downtown, make downtown west. Do, you know, just copy the menu, do all this stuff. I mean, we really broke the mold, and we didn't do it because we were some sort of real forward-thinking geniuses. We were idiots. We just thought, oh, well, why would anybody want the same thing that they could get downtown 10 minutes west?
Mm.
Let's do something different. And there was only one item on the menu that was the same. And inside of like the models that you follow for making a second location in a restaurant and bar,
mm-hmm.
that just flies in the face of conventional wisdom. But it was really successful because what we were able to do was say, paint from a blank canvas. Hey, mm-hmm. what would we do? Oh, let's do this. This would be cool. And hey, let's dig up this part of the parking lot over here and turn it into a garden. And so we did that, and we can grow our own vegetables. Wouldn't that be neat? And so we tried that, and of course, it's not like we were making money on growing our own vegetables, but it led us to trying to source as much locally as we could, just because it sounded neat. It wasn't a buzzword. It wasn't, you know, in vogue. And it was actually a real pain in the butt. We ended up with 50-plus vendors. We had one guy driving an hour and a half to bring us bacon. It
wow.
was, you know...
It kind of flies in the face of the whole local movement concept.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had to reevaluate things like that along the way. And at the same time, we considered, like, hey, what if we went for the largest carbon footprint? No one's doing that. And,
oh, wait a minute. There is some people doing that. We'll leave them nameless, though, today.
Yeah. Well, I think I know who you're referring to, but I would say that that all sort of just meandered and found its own way and grew in an organic manner. It wasn't going to pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, yes, we saw this coming. What foresight, what innovation. We're such leaders. And at the same time, we put some good common sense to work, but at the same time didn't allow that to cut off the possibilities of just following your bliss.
Very good.
You know, I know every one of us has had somebody, some elder in our life at some point in time say, do what you love, the money will follow. Yeah, you know, and when you're in your teens or when you're just in college or doing, you know, you're trying to find your way, that is a really annoying thing to hear, right? Because
right.
you're like, somebody, just tell me what I'm going to, look, here's what I need. I need something that's going to help me pay the student loans, right?
Right.
And
But the deal is, what they really don't follow through on is, you do what you love because you're good at it. And not only are you good at it, you're going to get a lot better at it because you're going to find enjoyment and fulfillment, and it's going to be one of those things that you're going to show up whether or not the pay is coming in or not. Well, for a certain amount of time, right?
Right.
Because, you know, when you're out on the street, that changes your priorities. But the premise is you can't get caught up in the whole mechanics of doing anything and risk losing the love and the passion that got you into doing it in the first place. It's always a give and take. It's always a bit of a balance. And I think we've done that pretty well.
Nicely said. Indeed. Well, we are just about done, Otto, and I have my final question of the evening is one I like to ask just about everybody. And so
except
here,
for me, right?
Yes, indeed. Monkeys be damned. So my last question of you tonight is, what is your earliest beer memory? And I'd caveat that with, this doesn't have to be the earliest consumption memory. This is just the earliest time that you became aware of beer. What does that conjure up in your mind?
Well, it conjures up two memories for me.
Okay.
So the 70s is when I was growing up, and I was born in 1969, and so I collected beer cans.
Okay.
And I was not old enough to drink, but would cajole my father and grandfather into buying any beer that I had not had in my collection, which I'm sure they hated, right? You know, Dad, let's go to the liquor store.
Now, why did you choose,
right.
Why did you want to collect? Yeah, why did you want to collect beer cans as a kid?
That was a thing to do, man.
Okay.
Yeah, all
right.
That was really in mid to late 70s.
Okay. Then. Keep going.
But anyway, I remember there was some. Have you ever heard of Stag beer?
Yes.
Steak, taters, and gravy. It's Stag is all a grown body needs. But Stag was in Belleville, Illinois, right across the river. And my grandfather used to drink Stag, and they had a special I don't know what it was. I think it was whatever the weight was in aluminum cans,
mm-hmm.
which was like in flattened out compressed can. If you collected enough of it, you could get an aluminum baseball bat, and with Stag on it.
Okay.
And we got the bat. I no longer have the bat. It was in my grandfather's stuff. And I remember collecting those, and remember a family picnic. That it's just one of those vivid memories. It was, I think it was a 6-ounce can of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Hmm.
And my dad gave that to me, and I remember sitting there, and that's about all I remember.
Huh.
Sitting there drinking the beer on the sunny hillside on this little quilt, and then having a nap.
Those are great memories. Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing, Otto. It's been a pleasure to have you here today. The hour just flew by, so you can get back to your family. Thanks for making time.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for all the listeners for tuning in, and keep making the world a safer place for great beers out there, guys.
Absolutely.
And
yes, and we'll see you in San Diego, if not before, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
Right on.
Okay. All right. Cheers. Bye, Otto.
Cheers. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
All right.
You've been listening to Beer Radio. I'm Ginger Johnson, your host.